What's up, everyone? You're listening to DS 106 Radio. DS 106 for life.
Hey, everybody. This is Tim Clark, and Taylor is with me here.
Hello.
And welcome to the next session. A real quick thanks to DeWitts and Pates. That was super fun and nice audio production there. Very atmospheric. That was a really neat session. This one's going to be way worse, I promise. entirely because of me. But before we get started, my inspiration for this was I really liked the idea for a track that allowed you to talk about the year that you've had. And the other thing that I really wanted to do was something that I thought Paul Bond would want to listen to. So a shout out to Paul, one of my DS 106 and DS 106 radio heroes. He's a great DJ. He's a walking encyclopedia of good music and local radio. So I thought I'd play some blues because I know from time to time he's jumped on and turned me on to some really amazing blues and R&B artists. So I'm calling this the Austerity Blues. I did a very little bit of research for this. So I noticed as I was sort of searching around that there is a book called Austerity Blues that has to do with higher education. It was written, I believe, in 2016. And it addressed the sort of defunding of higher education across large university systems. So I think New York, California, and possibly Illinois. That's not what this is. This is hopefully kind of a sound-off show. I'm going to put a phone number in the Discord channel here. And Taylor, what do you think? Are you up to give this a try? It might not work at all.
Yeah, I can test it. Yeah.
Or just to sort of ride this train with me. Okay, so the number is 267, and this is a U.S. number, 267-227-0106. And it took me so long to game the Google Voice ecosystem to get a phone number that ended in 106. I'm really proud of that. So yeah. I hope that I can get someone at least to call in here in a little while. We're not ready just yet. But once we open up the lines, it would be really great. And I think we can pull it off. We'll see. If not, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Okay. Absolutely. So just for a little bit of context, my name is Tim Clark. My official title is Digital Learning Librarian, but I share with many of the folks over the last couple of days a sort of instructional technologist, instructional designer role, as well as some librarian stuff. I oversee the Domain of One's Own project at the college where I work, Muhlenberg College in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I've been there in various roles. I keep doing the same work. They just keep changing my title. I've been there for about 15 years.
That sounds familiar, I think, for lots of people, I imagine.
Yeah. And we're a smallish private liberal arts school in eastern Pennsylvania, near New Jersey and New York. And there are lots of colleges and universities within our general vicinity, which is a great thing, I think. But over the last couple of years, I think it's contributed to this sense of competitiveness for what is perceived to be an ever-shrinking pool of college-age students. And so one of the straw men that I'd like to kind of knock down in this is talking about this notion of an enrollment cliff or a demographic cliff that's been kicking around, at least in the United States, for a while. I would imagine this is pretty much a U.S.-centric sort of a conversation. Hopefully, our friends elsewhere will find the music at the least entertaining. So anyway, in the post-COVID sort of financial anxiety and with nearby college and university closings and mergers, That's sort of a national thing as well. Again, this idea, what I think of as a sort of a fallacy around this idea of an enrollment cliff. My school has kicked off a sort of new round of the austerity blues. And so I thought, you know, I would draw on the blues for inspiration. And maybe if you all are experiencing something similar to this out there, you might have some insights and some observations and some strategies for coping with the austerity blues as well. Again, the number is 267-227-0106. And just to sort of set the musical stage here, I thought we might listen to a blues song and listen a little more closely than we might if we were just sort of driving or had music on in the background. I'm not an expert on the blues. I appreciate them very much. I can count 12 bars. That's about as far
as
I can go.
That's all you need.
All right. And I can generally tell one style of blues from another, you know, if it's boogie-woogie or, you know, those kinds of things. The thing about the blues that I appreciate the most, I think, is, and this might be contrary to what some folks' impression of the blues is, I find it to be very uplifting. It's a source of intelligent humor, resistance in the face of what I would consider nearly unimaginable hardship. It can't be overstated that the blues, like jazz and hip hop, is one of the greatest cultural contributions the United States has given to the world. And it's the African American musicians, and particularly Southern African Americans, those who are part of the great Black diaspora, who invented and spread this musical form and made it central, really, I think, to the U.S. musical experience. It's the ground stone, it's the cornerstone for bluegrass, for rock and roll, for so many other forms and genres of music.
Almost any popular genre right now, honestly, and especially particularly in Western Hemisphere music, you can root part of it at least back to the blues, if not most of it. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really, to me, pulling the call and response from West African music and integrating that gospel music, it's really, I think, like you said, something that can't be acknowledged enough. So I thought we would start with a song by Leroy Carr. He's on the piano and the vocalist. It's called Big Four Blues. This song is about 100 years old. And one of the great blues names I found, Scrapper Blackwell on guitar. So this one's for you, Paul. I hope you like it.
Won't you please turn your train around? Big boy, big boy, won't you please turn your train around? 'Cause here I sat all down and out with my head hung down. I tried to be as good to that woman. As one man could be. And I mean it's a shame the way she went and left for me. Thank you. next man. Won't you let a poor man ride you blind? Please, Mr. Brakesman, won't you let a poor man ride you blind? I'm just trying to make it back to that gal who's wine my mind.
So what'd you think?
I've never heard that one, and I wouldn't call myself super knowledgeable about the blues, but I enjoy it a lot. And as a saxophone is my main instrument that I play, and so I like playing it, but I'm like, again, not very knowledgeable. But I love blues guitar specifically. I will say is probably my favorite of especially older blues stuff. So yeah, loved it.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought from a close listening, I'm just really curious to the other listeners out there. Do you feel it? Do you feel the familiarity of the form? Do you know how to anticipate maybe the chord changes or the way at the end of 12 bars, it sort of walks back around to the beginning? Even the way it sort of resolves at the end of the song is very comforting and familiar. And I think that's the great contradiction. That's the magic of the blues, is the subject matter can be really sad, right? He's lost the love of his life. She's jumped on a train and he doesn't have the money to buy a ticket to follow her. And he's asking, hey, can you just look the other way and let me hop on this train? And the brakeman is turning him away and say, you know, get out of here. That's a really sad story, right? It's complex, and but because I feel sharing this story with the singer, you're kind of sort of shouldering it together, and also the familiarity of blues music means that you're participating in a way that's different, I think, than other forms of music where you really don't know what's coming next, you know, or there are more possibilities. It's a larger sort of there's not just left and right that you can choose from, like a choose your own adventure, right?
Well, and absolutely, and like building on that, I mean, a huge part of blues is that it's improvisational, right? Or parts of it can be, right? So either. Obviously, like examples of music that have solo sections in them, of course, right? But even the songs themselves are likely built on improvisations that that are made possible by that familiar and easy to grasp structure you're talking about. And I think that itself has. You can sit here and draw a million parallels between that and how education works, right? in ways that I love, and I think speak to even some fundamental things we know about learning and how people learn.
Oh yeah, so. Yeah, that's absolutely true, and I think the major sort of thing I'd like to sort of place out there to kick around for the next 45 minutes or so is this notion of catharsis, right? How that feels to us, to feel connected, to feel like we can anticipate, and even just as a listener, there's a participatory sense to the blues that I think is different from other genres of music. And so piggybacking on top of that, if you're at an institution that's stuck in the austerity blues, if you're hearing things like a tuition-driven institution or maximizing return on investment and all of these sorts of neoliberal buzzwords that tend to find their way into the conversation when you come down with the austerity flu, when your institution is in the austerity blues, that notion of call and response, knowing what to anticipate, knowing how to improvise within the framework of what you're provided, all of those things, I think, are really helpful strategies and lessons for how to keep your spirits up, how to maybe not take the bait for some of the things that an administration might ask of a faculty or a staff, how to prepare in advance if you're seemingly caught off guard with something that's happening, if you recognize it within the sort of paradigm of the blues, then you know what the response is. You know how to be improvisational in those moments because you're following along the pattern that has repeated itself in higher education many times over the last 35, 40 years, right? That's kind of where I'm coming from with the rest of this. But I have talked an awful lot. Does that seem like a pretty good setup, Taylor, for the next few songs?
Yeah.
All right.
I think so.
So let's do it. I'm going to play a song by a man named Corey Harris. He is a Bates College graduate, another fine small liberal arts school in Maine. He is also the recipient of a MacArthur Genius Grant, and he is an incredible musician. So we're going to hear Fish Ain't Biting from Corey Harris.
Check it. Give a man a fish. Teach him how to fish. Bring the whole school to his door. But what's he gonna do when the water dry up and the fish ain't biting no more? Fish ain't biting, fish ain't biting, fish ain't biting round in no more. Well, fish ain't biting, fish ain't biting no more. They're taking up the catfish and grinding up the bone. Well, I was down East Texas, Jefferson Town, I had no catfish, had to turn around. Well, fish ain't biting, fish ain't biting no more. Taking up the catfish and grinding up the bone. Well, the Reverend Worm got him a catfish farm. He said, boy, hook the worm and let the line on down. Fish ain't biting, baby. Fish ain't biting no more. Taking up the catfish and grinding up the bone.
Pocket full of money. I never had a ruby red ring. All I ever had was you, babe, to sit and listen to me sing. I've got the blues, the empty pocket blues. Well, I never had a barrel full of money. I never had a big Cadillac. All I ever had was you, babe, and that's a fact. I've got the blues, empty pocket blue. Some people got barrels of money, bushels of ruby red rings, but they ain't got a man like mine, and they don't know how to sing. I got the blues, the empty pocket blue. Now some say the blues are sorrowful, some say the blues are sad, but when I sing the blues to you, they come out feeling glad. I got the blues, the empty pocket blues. Now don't put your money in a barrel, don't waste it on a ruby red ring. Give it all to your own little girl to fix your dinner while you sing. I got the blues, the empty pocket blues. I got the blues, empty pocket blues.
All right, welcome back. That was Odetta, the one and only remarkable queen of the blues, as I believe she's been called, National Medal of the Arts and Humanities recipient, Lifetime Achievement Award from the Library of Congress, numerous honorary degrees, and a proud graduate of Los Angeles City College. With Empty Pocket Blues. So let's see if anyone's brave enough to call in. If not, I've got a couple more songs to play, and we can take it from there. I do want to be clear that I'm not trying to make light of the serious state of finances for many colleges and universities. Here's just a real quick roll call from my region, the Mid-Atlantic region of the United States. In 2022, these are all post-COVID mergers or closures. University of the Sciences merged with St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. 2,420 students were affected. In 2023, Bloomfield College in New Jersey closed abruptly. 1,300 students thereabouts were affected. And then in 2024, Pennsylvania College of Health Sciences also merged with St. Joseph's University, 1,800 plus students. St. John's University, Staten Island, closed due to low enrollment. 861 students were affected. The College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, closed because of financial insolvency, 2,786 students. Wells College in Aurora, New York, also financial difficulties, 357 students. And Cabrini University in Radnor Township, Pennsylvania, right down the road from where I live, closed for financial reasons. 2,267 students were affected. I think the one that shook our area the most, though, was the very abrupt closing of University of the Arts in Philadelphia. Over 1,300 students were impacted, many after they had already paid their deposits and tuition. And they cited accreditation, enrollment, and financial challenges. Lots of other colleges and universities have stepped up to be especially welcoming and accommodating with respect to transfers of credits and courses and those kinds of things. This is a significant issue, but I think we need to place at least partial responsibility where I feel it lies, and that's the significant disinvestment on part of state and federal governments in higher education broadly. I think one of the calls and responses in the austerity blues should be that education is a public good, and it benefits all of us, all of society. And the financial burdens that these colleges and universities are carrying have disproportionately been placed upon the students themselves, borrowing increasing amounts of money, making it much more challenging for them to start their lives. And some would argue that that is by design, right? So I just wanted to put that out there and to acknowledge those facts so that I wouldn't be misinterpreted as say, maybe glib or paying too little attention to the challenges that colleges and universities face. Any thoughts about that, Taylor?
Yeah, it's you see it all over too. There's even just in I'm in Wisconsin, and there's been plenty of that even in Wisconsin, which there's definitely less concentration of schools here than there is in your neck of the woods. But it's hitting hard, I think, everywhere. And it's hitting hard specifically, well, not specifically, but I will say especially the smaller schools, I think. And it's hard, like, because it's a number. There's a lot of reason. You mentioned before, right? Like, there's, hey, we're experiencing lower enrollment, but there's a lot of specific factors too, right? And it's very difficult, or maybe complicated, I guess, to be paying attention to this stuff, because you're at any point dealing with a mixture of, you know, sadness around the state of things, anger at possibly leadership or any number of people or government or, yeah. You know, there's a lot of things you can place that anger, which, you know, that's what the blues is about, is that complicated malaise of feelings, I think. But yeah, I don't think you're being glib at all. I love that you're bringing the blues into this conversation. This conversation that we're having as folks who work in and around higher ed, I think constantly, and recognizing of, you know, we need an output in some ways that isn't just wallowing in it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we need to share each other's burdens. And I think, that's also what the blues is about. As we'll hear in a couple of songs coming up, the blues is also about finding creative ways of getting around what seem to be intractable obstacles. So let's do that. Let's listen to one more song. This is Gimme a Penny by Big Mama Thornton.
Oh,
spot. Just to give you a heads up. But I think I have it muted properly. Would you mind hanging out until the end of this song? And then I'll put you on the air. That's great. It's so great to hear from you. Alright. So yeah, just hang in there and then I'll introduce you. Alright. Y'all, in my defense, the mute button is very, very tiny. Okay. we have Joe on the phone. Can everybody hear Joe?
It wouldn't be DS-106 if we didn't find some dead air.
We can hear. That's him,
important. So. All right. So
or some non-dead air.
Right. Yeah. All right. So I'm 75%. That's a passing grade. All right. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Pretty well. How are you?
Oh, I'm great.
It's good to hear you. Like you bear some responsibility for this this habit that I've formed of DJing on DS-106 and the attendant music collection. Because there was a set of sets that you and Daniel were doing that really convinced me I could do this and would enjoy it. So I appreciate that.
Oh yeah. Well, guilty, I guess.
Yeah. I hope I've developed this into something like a thought. I think one of the really useful things about the blues is that it marks that communal experience. I think that, and whether that's like specifically dealing with, segregation or racism or, poverty, or more broadly, I remember one of those rock documentaries that came out in the 90s featured, I think it was Rufus Thomas saying, look, if you come home and the house is dark and the pans are empty and your woman is gone, I don't care what color you are, you have the blues. Mm. So I think there's a lot in the music that gives a communal experience. And I think one of the things I see from the position of relatively privileged small school that has had some enrollment trouble lately. I think we could use some austerity blues so that we don't fall into the trap of thinking, well, it's because they did something wrong. It's mm-hmm. because they're different, or it's not coming for us because we're special. I think finding some ways to actually get into it would be healthy for us, so that we don't hit any of those traps.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I should point out that 80% of the college and university closings between 2004 and 2020 were for-profit institutions. So yep. the vast majority of school closings that have left students with debt and no degree have not been the non-profit schools, whether state or private. And or I should say public or private. That's one thing to put out there, but it's a real thing, I think, because it's been documented so well in Tressie McMillan Cotton's book. You know, that also was a burden that was disproportionately shouldered by first-generation students, Black students, and especially Black women, right? You know, I guess the other thing that I would say is just over half of students impacted by a school closure never re-enroll in college. Mm-hmm. And that's wow. heartbreaking to me. 52.9% is the number that I pulled.
Wow.
So, you know, that's another thing I think for all of higher education to acknowledge and to work around. Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to be one of the things that's really interesting regionally. I think.
All right. Sorry about that, folks. I think I was just trying to push this thing a little too hard. I do appreciate Joe calling in, and hopefully you all got to hear the excellent points he was making. It took me a minute or two to catch that things had locked up. While I try to put everything back together here, I'm going to jump back in and play another tune, and then I'll see if I can't get Taylor back on the line. Again, my apologies, flying a little too close to the sun, I think. But Money is the Name of the Game by Coco Taylor should make everything a little better.
than a poor girl may.
Thanks for sticking through that little meltdown with me. I really appreciate it. So I'm just going to talk for a minute. We've got about 12 minutes left. I want to play one or maybe two more songs. I just want to talk a little bit about my experience at my college. So we come out of COVID, and I think at the urging of the Board of Trustees, a fancy consultancy was hired to basically give us a health check as an institution from a competitiveness perspective. And unsurprising to me, after we paid them money to sort of give us this health check, they came back and told us that there was an urgent situation that just absolutely had to be dealt with. and handed us off to other consultants who would then help us with those issues that they had identified. Again, talking about the enrollment cliff, what I think of as a fallacy. And the reason that I say that is the national percentage, and this is February 2023 U.S. Census Bureau and American Community Survey one-year estimate data. So this is about as good as you can get in the United States on levels of educational attainment. And they tend to, the Census Bureau tends to look at 25 or older folks. The national average of having completed a four-year degree is 37.7% of the population 25 years or older. That includes four-year degree and advanced degrees, okay? If you look at some college and associate degrees, that number jumps up to nationally, I want to say it's in the high 40s, low 50s, which is really, really great. But Allentown, the city where our college is, that number for four-year degree educational attainment for 25 and older is 20.3%. And Allentown's demographics and composition has been changing a lot over the last 15 or 20 years. We have an increasing, growing and vibrant community of Latino folk. And I don't think that it is ethically defensible to have a college that takes the advice of consultants to say, we need to do better to compete for this ever-shrinking pool of privileged, financially well-off, predominantly white folks who live in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic states, which was sort of the message that we got. We're not competing in for this apparently shrinking pool of folks who would be our first choice to have as students. Instead of taking that initiative and taking that energy and those resources to, say, lobby the state of Pennsylvania, which is second to last in investment in higher education. That's changed a lot under our new governor, but the early round of resource allocation has gone, as it should, in my opinion, primarily to community colleges across the state of Pennsylvania. But that still can't immediately address what has been decade after decade of disinvestment and so on for higher education. So this notion of a enrollment cliff or a demographic cliff, I think, is disingenuous at best, because what it's really talking about are folks whose parents have college degrees, who are graduating from schools, whether public or private, that tend to feed the higher education system in the United States. Okay. The last thing that I'll say is all of these initiatives that have spun out of what we learned from the consultants have been to revise our curriculum, which involved nearly every member of the faculty and much of our staff in a sprint that took place in a single academic year, and shuffling our advising, dramatic changes to how we do first-year advising, and then also looking at potential line-outs of different majors and minors, potentially even departments down the line, all of the kinds of things that one would expect would be the advice that comes once you catch the austerity blues at your institution. And the other thing that sort of followed after that is we've lost a lot of faculty and staff, right? We've even had, for the first time in the 15 years that I've been there, a number of layoffs that come abruptly and really impact the morale and good faith, I think, of the faculty and staff that work at a college or a university. So, we need to look out for one another. Joe's comment, I hope everyone heard it, about how the blues is a communal activity, the catharsis of the blues, recognizing the patterns of the blues, how to respond when you're given an opening to take that improvisational run, and how to sort of work within the ensemble of the blues, I think, has a lot of application if we sit and drink our coffee or tea and have our quiet moment in the morning and prepare for how we will respond to hearing that such and such might be leaving, or that you know, we're overworked, which is a legitimate sort of a situation. We need to be able to respond in a way that can recognize and acknowledge the blues, the austerity blues, but also present a kind of a creative way out of it. And with that, I would like to play another tune, another of the great, great blues names that I came across. This is Suitcase Blues, for all the faculty and staff, my dear colleagues who are now no longer my colleagues. This is by Sippy Wallace. And here we go. Any second now.
Well, my suitcase is packed, trunk is undone. You know by that I ain't gonna be here long, but I'm scared to go down that big road by myself. Lord, I'm scared to go down that big road by myself. I love you, baby, but your ways I just can't stand. I love you, baby, but your ways I just can't stand. So you get you another woman, I'll get me another man. Cause there ain't no loving, there ain't no getting along. Cause there ain't no loving, there ain't no getting along. I hear the whistles blow.
Suitcase Blues, Sippy Wallace. And as I'm getting ready to wrap things up, I'm just going to close with this. Blind Willie Johnson's Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground was etched into two golden records called the Voyager Golden Record that were launched into space in 1977, one on each of the Voyager spacecraft. And both are now billions of miles from the sun, one 15 billion miles plus and the other 12 billion miles away from Earth. Voyager 1 is the farthest human-made object, and on both of those spacecraft is a blues song, a beautiful blues song, Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground. So that just helps me to put into perspective the true contribution that the blues has made, not just in our culture, but across the world. And if you get a chance to listen to that song, I'd encourage you to do it. Anyway, thanks everyone for your time and for listening. Sorry about that one little glitch, and I hope we can do it again soon. Thank you.